I'm Bob Bolton from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and this is Alaska Voices, a place for communities to connect through conversation in order to build a better tomorrow for Alaskans and the world.
Originally, I grew up in Gakona, Alaska.
Tyonek.
Egypt.
Idaho.
Grand Parc.
St. Lawrence Island.
St. Paul.
And I'm here with my student.
My science buddy.
My teacher.
My homie.
I'm his daughter.
My name is Lance Whitwell. I'm 53 years old, and my relationship to Ryan is friend and colleague.
My name is Ryan Tui. My age is 40 years old, and my relationship to Lance is friend, collaborator, colleague. Can you talk about, you've done a lot of different things. Can you give us kind of a little list of all the different positions and things you've...
Well, I think on my current track as an environmental worker, I began as a Raven AmeriCorps member.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't realize that.
I actually did 2 years in the Raven AmeriCorps program, which is an environmental... Raven, I think, is a rural Alaska village environmental network. And so there was like 25 or 30 of us from different communities across the state who would get together here in Anchorage and just help each other, you know, learn how to make plans and how to work with youth and how to give presentations and public speaking and things like that, which was a real transition for me, you know, because I grew up in some small villages as an outsider and was taught to keep my mouth shut and keep my opinion to myself, you know. And then in the first part of the AmeriCorps program is public speaking and express your opinion and try to make changes, you know, and it was kind of hard for me to get over that.
Right.
But it all worked really well, and the people received me very well back home. Some of my co-members, the AmeriCorps members, I would help them out if they needed help, you know, trying to get them to be a little less shy or something, you know, about how to just focus on what you're talking about and speak to the back of the room, you know. Just little things like that, and they really like that. They, you know, many of them thank me for my help with that. And so I just kind of took that a little farther and went and took some college classes and worked with some of the mentors that they had us working with, and I began teaching my own classes in the villages. It's really one of the proudest things that I do. I just love it. I love being out in the villages and talking to local people and being able to help them face some of their concerns in the environment and just basically just keeping themselves and their communities safe.
Yeah.
Now it seems like the weather has changed and we're getting a lot more humidity and moisture coming in from the south that's keeping the river level a little bit higher than usual. We're really interested in whether that's going to affect the salmon runs or not, and that's one reason why we like to work with the Fish and Wildlife Service to keep an eye on some of the habitat. But I'm learning so much from working with these guys. I'm learning about the different temperatures and where the salmon spawn is really interesting. They seem to spawn where there's upwellings from groundwater.
Yeah.
You know, so it keeps the fish cool in the summer, and then it doesn't freeze in the winter.
Right.
And we're finding that that's where the salmon seem to congregate and spawn. And so knowing where these areas are is really important to us, even as like backup drinking water sources, you know, to know where the groundwater is really, really helpful to us for our long-range planning. And then, you know, just the salmon themselves are a very important resource for us.
Yeah.
The Chandler River, so the native name is Tadrinjik. It's, I believe, the second largest chum salmon hatchery on the Yukon River. Something that we have been looking forward to is actually studying the king salmon, the Chinook salmon spawning, trying to locate where they congregate, and so that we can know which areas really need protection, you know, as far as king salmon spawning. The conservation district encompasses the entire 1.8 million acres of tribal land. The tribal land is you know, almost totally encompassed by wildlife refuges. We've got the Arctic Refuge to the north, and we've got the Yukon Flats Refuge to the south. So we've got a board of directors, and we keep the business going, and we keep the process going, trying to get some USDA funds for community gardens, for food security issues. We're really looking forward to being able to grow the conservation district as a medium for trying to explore other funding or for donations or trying to accomplish some of the work plans that we can't include with IGAP. You know, the conservation district is another mechanism that we can use to accomplish some more in-depth type of environmental protections, as well as we want to look at some sort of small economic development. We're really thinking about maybe looking at doing a timber inventory on some of the sites on the lower river. We're really trying to get a community garden program going to provide more nutritious food for our youth in school and for some of our elders. Venati at one time in the 40s and 50s was a major gardening center, and they would trade potatoes and carrots, things like that. They would go down and trade for salmon on the Yukon and supply vegetables and stuff for the steamboats.
Oh, wow. Really?
Coming up. And it's pretty much eroded away. All the gardens and stuff were on the old village of Venati.
Are some of the elders, were they around kind of during that
yeah.
time? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then they were actually the driving force behind us trying to get it going again.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, great. Wow.
They really missed it. They said they really missed the fresh vegetables and things like that. There's a few of the younger people who are working in some of our programs now who are in it for their heart and for satisfaction and wanting to do good for the people and for the land, and starting to realize that at one point, you know, they're going to be the leaders, and that this whole tribal land belongs to them, you know, and having them grow into a stewardship type of a position is really good. It's really encouraging to see that.
You mentioned there's a couple actual youth board members for the tribal conservation
district. We do. We've got two youth board members for the conservation district, and more want to get into it. And a lot of just the general community is involved. They don't care so much about the politics that are, you know, happening in the government and things like that, even in the tribal offices, but they like the idea of having this conservation district where it's a non-political type of a deal and everybody just working together for the good of the people. And it's good. It makes my heart happy anyway, you know, to be a part of this. You know, I certainly don't do any of this alone.
Yeah.
You know, all of this is with people supporting me and the local leadership supporting what I do. That allows me to make some of these things go.
Alaska Voices builds bridges by creating a space where community members, friends, policymakers, and scientists can share stories and place-based knowledge. This project was developed in partnership with StoryCorps and was funded by the Alaska Climate Adaptation Science Center. Additional funding was provided by the University of Alaska Fairbanks Chancellor through a generous gift from the Bentley Family Trust. Alaska Voices would not be possible without the help and efforts of an amazing group of people. Our producer and audio engineer is Kelsey Skomberg of Mossy Stone Media. Our podcast and outreach specialist is Michael DeLue, and our website designer is Carolyn Rosner. If you are interested in more conversations or information, please visit our website at alaskavoices.org.